Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present on history.org. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time, I'm asking Jim McDonald, and at Colonial Williamsburg, he's supervisor of the Wetherburn and Raleigh Taverns, but he used to be the lead interpreter of the With House, which is what we want to talk about. One of the great stories from Williamsburg in the early days was the murder of George With. You know all about that?
A little bit. Okay. A little bit, Lloyd.
That'll do. That's a little bit more than I know. So.
Well, that's good.
Now, at the time he was killed, he had left Williamsburg to go to Richmond, right?
Yes.
Okay. Who killed him?
Well, first we need to go back to your original question and rephrase it slightly.
Okay.
Because he was allegedly murdered. There was a trial, as he would have been very proud of, taking place. And the culmination of that trial was the individual in question was released. Only because of several extenuating circumstances, which would have made George With slightly happy and slightly sad at the same time. The murder, or alleged murder, took place up in Richmond. His grandnephew, George With Sweeney, was the one accused of this. And the accused not only was accused of murdering George With, but also murdering a young boy by the name of Michael Brown, who was currently living with George With at the time. And when we take a look at the court trial as it transpired, what we're looking at is testimony that was being given in the trial by way of African Americans living in Richmond at the time. One in particular, Lydia Broadnax, who was his cook here in Williamsburg, was disallowed because the testimony of blacks against whites at that period of time was not admitted into court as official evidence.
I got off to a bad start because I know, and I'm interested in it, but the audience may not know who was George With.
George With is one of our founding fathers here in Virginia. He is a signer of the Declaration of American Independence. He served briefly at the Constitutional Convention up in Philadelphia prior to his wife's death. And I know him more notably as the first professor of law at the College of William & Mary, which was the first law school here in North America, also serving as the, I wouldn't say legal advisor, but law teacher to Thomas Jefferson.
In his day, he was very well known.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. He was very well known as a lawyer, as a great statesman, and here within the city of Williamsburg, as a great friend to many individuals in the political world.
He is less known now, and I've always been curious why he sort of faded. Do you have any guess?
Well, I believe, as many of our past and current members of the political world will tell you, that the work that they do should be, I don't want to say transparent, but should be behind the scenes. He was an individual who worked throughout his entire life to assist people. And when the Capitol moved from Williamsburg to Richmond, he eventually moves up there, giving up his post at the College of William & Mary. He serves briefly at the Constitutional Convention, but once the Constitution takes place and sets this framework for the United States as we know it today, he comes back to Richmond, and there he just takes on his life serving as a public servant for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Does not go on to the higher levels of government as we would find James Madison and Thomas Jefferson doing later on.
In Williamsburg, if I have got this correct, he was one of three men who rewrote the laws of the Commonwealth?
He, along with Thomas Jefferson and Edmund Pendleton, were appointed to serve as a committee to visit the laws and to recommend to the General Assembly up in Richmond what they felt would be a good direction for the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia to move into. George With, I believe, worked on the section of laws from the 1688, so the British Commonwealth period, the beginning of that, to, I believe, the American Revolution. So that period of time right there.
Back to his grandnephew, because I've always loved him because he was named Sweeney, and I can't help but think of Sweeney Todd.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, his name was spelled two ways. It was Sweeney, S-W-E-N-N-E-Y, and S-W-I-N-N-E-Y.
Oh, so it's either Sweeney or Swiney.
Right. Thomas Jefferson learns of the murder of George Wythe through a Major Duval who's living up in Richmond at the time, and Duval is writing letters, and he spells Sweeney's name with an I. And some of the court records actually have it with an E. So it's spelled both ways.
Okay. Murder.
Yes.
The alleged murder.
The alleged murder.
To satisfy your requirement. How?
How? George Wythe Sweeney, at the time, we need to keep in mind, is between 16 and 17 years of age. He's living up in Richmond with George Wythe, his granduncle, I believe. While he is up there, he appears to have gotten in with the wrong crowd. He's drinking, he is gambling an awful lot, and he needs money. And so while he's living with his granduncle, he begins to take books out of his library and sell them. He eventually goes ahead and forges his uncle's name to bank drafts, which is another part of the case that comes out a little bit later. One morning, he is spied by Lydia Broadnecks, George Wythe's cook, as going into his uncle's office and opening up his uncle's desk, and inside they're taking out a piece of paper, a piece of parchment that's wrapped up with a ribbon, that Lydia later informs the court that she was told by Master Wythe was his last will. And he's reading through that will, and in the will he supposedly reads that he is going to come into a large inheritance. But Michael Brown, this young boy, mulatto boy who's living with George Wythe, is also going to get something out of the estate. However, if Michael should die, Sweeney will get everything. What eventually happens and transpires then is that on a morning, Lydia and Michael are having breakfast. There's some strawberries, there's some coffee and the like. George Wythe normally took his breakfast in his room that Lydia would bring up to him, but on this day he decided to come downstairs and have his breakfast, which was coffee and I believe some strawberries. Day or two later, the entire household became ill. Michael became sick, Lydia became sick, George Wythe became sick. And eventually, Michael Brown will die, George Wythe will linger on. And during this period of lingering on, he begins to hear from his friends who come to visit him events that are transpiring, that lead him to believe that George Wythe Sweeney now is the individual who is behind all of this.
You know, in modern terms, in today's terms, George Wythe Sweeney would certainly be referred to as a teenage loser.
It could be. Could be.
Let's see. He's stolen from his uncle. He's poisoned some poor little boy who all he's going to do is just share it. And he really wants it all. I've always been delighted that George Wythe lasted long enough to get
him out of the will. Well, there were several codicils to the will because this took several days to go through, and eventually at the end, Sweeney is taken out of it entirely, and so many of the men who called George Wythe their friend saw this as a way of George was pointing to the person who murdered him, because his last words supposedly were, "I am murdered," and then he passed on. But when we take a look at what happens in court, it's remarkable because William Wirt and Edmund Randolph, who were two of George Wythe's closest friends and colleagues, represented Sweeney at the trial and were the individuals who were instrumental in gaining for him his acquittal.
Oh, well, I guess the law requires you to do what you have to do, whether you like it or not, but that seems a little far-fetched.
But that's exactly what George Wythe would tell you. George Wythe would tell you that the law comes first.
Well, yeah.
And
well,
the law at the time said that a black, a Negro, could not give testimony against a white individual in court. And that is exactly what they used in order to get the testimony of Lydia and several others out of the proceedings.
Do we know what the poison was?
George Wythe Sweeney supposedly went and tried to find rat's bane, He went to find some other chemicals to mix up. He had gained the advice of a fellow by the name of Greenhow that told him that ratsbane was illegal in Virginia, but somehow he got his hands on either ratsbane or arsenic. The doctors, when they opened up Michael Brown to examine him in an autopsy, found evidence that suggested poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why George Withsweeney is acquitted, because the doctors in question could not affirm 100% that it was poison that did it.
He certainly wasn't shot in the head.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Well, Lydia got sick too, right?
Lydia becomes ill, but fortunately for Lydia Broadnax, she survives. Her constitution was a bit stronger.
Now, at that point, she had already been freed by Wythe, right? She was a free black.
She was manumitted, yes. When his second wife, Elizabeth Tolliver Wythe, passed away here in Williamsburg, he goes through the process of manumitting or setting free several of his slaves. Lydia is one of them, and Lydia maintains her residence here with George Wythe, staying on as his cook in Williamsburg. When she moves to Richmond, that's where her name Lydia Broadnax comes into play, because here in Williamsburg she's always referred to as Lydia. The first reference we have to her as being Lydia Broadnax is in Richmond. So she moves up there, and it appears that either she's acquired some money or Mr. Wythe has set her up with some money, and she's purchased a boarding house. She's running a boarding house there. And she comes to Wythe every day, and she performs the duties that she did here in Williamsburg, and that is as a housekeeper and a cook.
Okay, one that I have no idea, so it's all new to me. What happens to George Withsweeney?
George Withsweeney. He's accused of murdering his uncle. He's accused of murdering Michael Brown. They acquit him on both instances because of what we spoke of earlier, the testimony. He's also charged with forging his uncle's name on bank drafts. And this is where William Wirt really does his work. Forgery at the time that the Attorney General for Virginia was trying to use in court with George Withsweeney was a law that was put together in the 18th century to protect private individuals from forging their name on drafts, such as real estate transactions and bills of exchange and things like that. William Wirt's argument in court was that the Bank of Virginia is a public institution and not a private institution. And so the law that they currently had on the books had no effect on this. So although George Withsweeney did forge his uncle's name and the bank teller said, yes, he did, they had all the evidence, the law wasn't there to support it. And so he was let off on a technicality again.
There are trials today where I sometimes have to bite my tongue because the lawyers seem to me to be getting around the law by coming up with legal and clever arguments, which also seems to me to be the case there.
One little addition to this, though, is that 6 or 7 months after George Wythe dies, the General Assembly of Virginia gets together and passes a law making what has just happened illegal. So they revise the earlier law to include public banks and public obligations and things
so
of that nature.
George Wythe changed the laws of the Commonwealth one more time.
By his death he did, yes.
Do we know what happened to Sweeney in the end? I mean, he beat the rap, as we say. Do we know where he went, what he did?
Initially he is found guilty of the forgery, and he is sentenced to be in prison and taken out once a month for an hour to stand in the pillory. But that, by another court, is excused. The punishment is excused. And from that point, Edmund Randolph, William Wirt, and Major Duval, who I mentioned, all mention that he leaves Richmond and he travels out west. And once he goes out west, he is not heard of ever again.
Let us hope he became Billy the Kid.
Possibly. Or maybe met a quicker death than Billy the Kid did.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.